welcome to the Michelle Mission, Two Men, One Podcast, every black film ever made. My name is Len, a.k.a. the Bat Tribble. And as always, I'm joined by my partner.
Hey, this is Vincent Williams.
Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we are bringing it to you live right here from the Video Content Factory, our review of the number one film in the country, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
There it is.
And joining us tonight for the review, ladies and gentlemen, is a man who is not only one half of the DTF Fun Hour, which you can find everywhere great podcasts be. He is not only appearing here in Philadelphia at the Punchline Comedy Center on June 30th and July 1st. He is a man who you will see in the second half of the show is undoubtedly the sexiest comedian in the world. It is Daryl Charles.
Daryl Charles.
Joining us for our review of Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Or Spider-Man Across the Sexy-Verse, apparently.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Hello to each and every one of you out there in the chat as we are streaming to YouTube and to Facebook.
Good evening, one and all.
Vincent, how are you doing, my friend?
I am fine. Moving into June in the summer, feeling good.
Yeah. Things are hopping in your way.
Hey, keep busy.
I know.
And you?
I cannot complain.
All right.
I cannot complain. Right. I could, but no one would care.
You're supposed to say, but no one would listen. And then I'd go, huh? See, that's... you're supposed to set the...
But you said you're going to do your joke anyway.
You're going to do it anyway. So
I could do it myself.
Just carry the whole thing.
I did see The Flash this weekend.
Okay.
You know, I went to a premiere of The Flash. Probably the other superhero movie. This summer.
Sure.
Definitely filled me with member berries.
All right.
So
you enjoyed it?
People seem to enjoy it around me.
People seem to enjoy it. That is our official Michelle Mission review. People seem to enjoy it. There you go.
Mm-hmm. All right. But we've got a packed show.
Beefy.
It is beefy.
Yeah, oh yeah.
It is very beefy. And that was before Daryl got here. But to show you how beefy it is, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to lead off with missives from the missionaries.
So what else is going on, Lynn?
We have emails, Vincent.
Ooh, missives from the missionaries.
Missives from the missionaries, ladies and gentlemen, where I usually would be reading the latest emails that we've received from all of the missionaries. And we do have more than a few, but because we're so packed this today, we're going to hold off on them for another night. Yet we do have one missive for you, Vincent.
Ooh, what type of missive is that?
I'm glad you asked. Because we have, for the first time in a long time, but certainly not the last time, we have a Michelle Mission voicemail.
Ooh, it's a voicemail.
Roll that sexy footage.
Hey, Vincent and Lynn, this is Calvin. I was calling up. I figured I'd throw Leonard a bone and leave a voicemail as opposed to writing an email. So I was calling about your recent review of The Cherokee Kid. One, I have to admit that I've always had a bit of a soft spot for Sinbad. I remember he was the reason why I was watching Star Search back in the day. He kind of intrigued me and kind of followed him throughout and was surprised when he popped back up later on after leaving the show. I was particularly intrigued by Leonard's take on kind of why he never really was able to get over the hump stardom-wise with his size being a barrier. And it sparked a couple of questions for me. One, I have to say, I really enjoyed the review, and I admit that I enjoyed The Cherokee Kid myself, so I'm glad you all recommended it to other people. But again, my questions. One, if the two of you were tasked with getting Sinbad over the hump at that time? How would you have done it? And two, seeing as how I also agree that one of the times that he shined the most was when he starred opposite Arnold Schwarzenegger in Jingle All the Way. If you were to build a franchise around the two of them, what would it be? I look forward to hearing your responses. Enjoy the show as always. Take care.
Interesting. How would we get Sinbad over? Thank you very much for the voicemail, Calvin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shout out to Calvin.
That's an interesting question. The first thing that comes to my mind, and I don't know if he would have gone for this because it might have stereotyped him a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking of, in around that same time, you had comedians who were trying to make it on Saturday morning.
Okay.
Remember Richard Pryor?
Yeah, Pryor's Place.
At Pryor's Place. Mm-hmm. Pee-wee Herman actually had success.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pee-wee Herman's Playhouse.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about Sinbad. You know, he's tall, he's mm-hmm. big. He was known, at least for some time, I think, didn't he wear, like, the clothes he wore, like, I think, like, his sister made? He had that, like, a clothing line.
I don't know who made them, but somebody made them.
Yeah, he had, like, these big, bright colors that he would wear.
Right.
I wonder if there might have been a space for him, especially since now, at the now, there would have been four networks as opposed to just the three.
Mm-hmm.
And also cable. I wonder if there might have been a space for him to do something on Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm.
To allow him to kind of like just be very, just as PG as he wants to be.
Sure.
Maybe a little bit more on the G side. But, you know, maybe find a lane there.
I have similar thoughts. I think when I think about Sinbad in a continuing space, I, of course, go to A Different World,
mm-hmm.
where he played sort of a mentor role. And the aspect of his character on Different World that I enjoyed was him interacting with Kadeem Hardison, with Daryl Bell, with some of the men on the set, so that I would like to see, much like you, something similar to that, where he can kind of use his energy and use his size, which kind of lends itself to a mentor role. I would even go so far as to say, because we talked about just the sort of physical challenges that came with having him on a screen.
Yeah.
With, you know, other people.
Right.
I was sitting here thinking I would not mind like almost a riff of The White Shadow.
You know, as you were saying that.
Where he played a basketball coach.
As you were saying that, I actually was thinking about The White Shadow.
Yeah.
That, and for those that don't know, this was like a late 70s, 80s series that starred a white actor, Ken Reeves.
Ken Howard.
Oh, Ken Howard. Ken Howard.
Mm-hmm.
Who was a former pro basketball player, mm-hmm. who then goes to become a high school basketball coach in the inner city.
Yes.
And it was a good show.
So, my wife is a big fan of
it. It was a good show. I had a solid run.
Yeah. Kevin Hooks.
Yeah, Kevin Hooks got mm-hmm. it.
Kevin Hooks.
Good start there. Not a start, but he definitely was a big mm-hmm. the big name there. And I actually was thinking about the White Shadow when you said that.
Mm-hmm.
My only concern about that is that Ken Howard did become a nuanced actor.
Yeah, but not on The White Shadow.
But he wasn't a bad actor.
I think Sinbad could handle.
I don't know. You think he could handle
The White Shadow?
Because The White Shadow was still like it was drama.
I'm gonna say to you the same thing that you say to me. When's the last time you watched The White Shadow?
Since the 80s.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's solid, but it's not Hill Street Blues.
No, of course.
Right.
No, I know it's not Hill Street Blues, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, Sinbad can handle Ken Howard's part.
You think he could?
I 100% think he could.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, because again, I think by the end of his tenure on Different World,
mm-hmm.
he was solid.
Okay.
Like, I actually wish he had never left.
Right, because he doesn't make it to the end.
He doesn't make it to the end.
Does he leave?
He leaves.
Like, on, like, as far as you know, did he leave on his own?
I don't know why he left the show.
Okay.
I would assume he had some other opportunities. Because, you know, Sinbad was...
He started doing some things.
He was popping for a second.
Yeah.
But by the end, he was a solid ensemble player.
That's true. To Calvin's other question, do you think there would have been a future for Sinbad and Arnold Schwarzenegger in movies as a team?
I think that is a very obvious yes, because I think Arnold Schwarzenegger, A, is, when given the opportunity, surprisingly collaborative. B, is funny. C, going back to what we talked about, the challenge of having Sinbad on screen just physically. Arnold Schwarzenegger is big enough, physically big enough, and personality big enough that it's in much like in
Jingle All the Way.
They played nicely off each other. So I think it worked. Yeah, I think it could work.
I don't know. I think it might be a one-trick pony as far as the two of them together. Like, I agree with everything you said about Arnold. And yes, I do think that they are good in Jingle All the Way. But I think that maybe you pull it for another movie, and then I don't think you...
It's damning it with faint praise, and I'm backhandedly agreeing with you because I don't like their pairing. But apparently people seem to enjoy it.
What do you mean?
The Rock and Kevin Hart. People seem to enjoy The Rock and Kevin Hart.
Oh, okay.
And I feel like the two of them could have that kind of energy for like three films.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess. Yeah. So you're saying like Arnold and Sinbad could do at least what The Rock and Kevin Hart have done.
Which people seem to enjoy.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. All right.
Well, all right.
Well, there you go, Calvin.
There you go, Calvin.
Thank you for the voicemail.
Yeah.
Really appreciate it.
And I know Sinbad has had some health issues. I think there's a version of the White Shadow that they could do right now if his health got up to speed.
He's a little older now.
Well, maybe it might calm his big ass down some.
Well, I mean,
is that insensitive?
A bit.
It's a little insensitive.
Considering the health issues he's had, it's pretty...
He's all that jumping around he used to do in the 90s.
I caught up with him.
Like, okay, see, you're worse than me.
How am I worse than you?
All right.
You said calm his big ass down.
God bless you, Sinbad.
Oh, you can't save it with God bless you, Sinbad.
You can save most things with God bless you, Sinbad.
Yeah, you hope. See you at the pearly gates.
Thank you, Calvin.
Thank you, Calvin. Thank you. Appreciate you, brother. All right, let's keep it moving, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to keep this train moving. It's time for the top five.
Top five. Who's your top five?
Top five, ladies and gentlemen, top five, where I come up with a top five list and I give it to Vince to give a commentary on, keeping it in theme as we are reviewing Spider-Man across the Spider-Verse, which features the Spider-Man that a lot of people know, but some of you may not know, to be fair. If you don't follow comic books like that, if you don't follow the comic book movies, you may not be aware that there is indeed a now long established second Spider-Man who has the real identity of Miles Morales.
Yes.
Who is a young African / Puerto Rican young man in the role of Spider-Man. And we're not going to go deep into his backstory. Ask your favorite comic book collector to know all about him.
Or ask any young person under the age of 20. I mean, I guess we'll talk about it. It's sort of fascinating. We're calling him the second Spider-Man. I think you're showing your age a little bit.
Because for some people, he's their Spider-Man.
Right, yeah.
Right. Yeah, you know, because he has been around that long now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sidebar, real quick, and then we'll get to it. One of my favorite memories was taking my nephew into a comic shop maybe 15 years ago. And he was staring at a statue kind of action figure, and he was staring at it. And I was like, what? He was like, wow, I didn't know there was a white Green Lantern.
I'm glad you said that. That's it. And that's because, for those people don't know, because for a long time, the Green Lantern, who was historically a white character when he started off, But in the 70s, there was a black Green Lantern that was created, John Stewart, who would have middling fame in the 70s and 80s. But in the, I guess, late 90s and 2000s, really took off because he was the designated Green Lantern on the Justice League cartoon.
Right.
Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, which was a historically acclaimed animated series that you can actually is streaming now.
Ran for years
on Cartoon Network. For some people, it is the best iteration of a lot of these superheroes, live action or animated form. And for a lot of people growing up on that series, their Green Lantern was a black man.
Look, comic books are still a niche hobby.
Yes.
Cartoons are on TV.
That's right.
So who's the real one?
And constantly running.
Right.
To that point. Tonight's top five are top five superheroes gone black.
Okay.
So these are superheroes who at one time were white, but for many people now, and you be the judge, their better iteration or more popular iteration is black.
Wow, and you got five of them.
I got five.
All right.
Now, I'm not saying all of them necessarily are better. You will be the judge.
I will be the judge.
But I will start with number five. You know what? It's funny you hit the gavel because I was just telling someone, it's like, yeah, we used to have a gavel here at my house on the show. But then we moved it into the YouTube and we put it on the desk. Benson has yet to use it, but I know one day he's just going to reach down and use
it. It's so far away. See, it used to be right by me.
I know.
But now, okay, but you said you'd be the judge, and that made me go.
All right. So you, right. So that's,
all
there
right.
You go.
Here we go.
Number five. This is Dr. Midnight.
Dr. Midnight.
A.K.A. Beth Chapel.
Yes.
From the Stargirl series.
Yes.
That was on the CW and also on HBO Max.
Absolutely.
Beth Chapel, who was played by Angelica Washington.
Yeah.
Is a main character in Stargirl. She's a brilliant student at Blue Valley High whose intellectual nature made her a bit of an outcast among her peers.
Sure.
But she formed an unlikely friendship with Courtney Whitmer, Stargirl, Yolanda Montez, and Rick Tyler as they work together to stop the villains of the past, aided by the artificial intelligence of the Golden Age JSA member Charles McKnighter, the blind white doctor who was the original
Dr. Midnight. All right.
Beth works with her friends to continue the legacy of the Justice Society of America as the new super heroine Dr. Midnight. Now, I don't know if you were ever a fan of Stargirl. I watched like the first two seasons. And then I realized that this is a show that's not for me.
Sure.
But sure. I did recognize the quality of it.
Okay.
And the reason why I kept going back and back to that show was it was a cute show. It was a fun show. But I actually just fell in love with Angelica Washington's performance of Beth Chapel, a.k.a. Dr. Midnight.
Okay.
Because she was a super intelligent young lady who recognized that she was an outcast to everybody else in the school, but it did not stop her from being very outgoing, very curious, very brave, putting her foot forward, recognizing her intelligence, working to the height of her intelligence, and actually as the series went along, finding herself very naturally and not just for plot contrivance, falling into a romance with one of the characters, aka Rick Tyler, Our Man. And I from the moment I saw her, I said, wow, she is really doing great work. And Dr. Midnight in the comics, you know, when he was originated back in the 40s, was pretty much just a, you know, a run-of-the-mill vigilante, mm-hmm. except that he was blind.
Right.
So, and he came up with these goggles that allowed him to see in the dark. And I guess it was some kind of cool concept to him, but more often than not, he was just played off as like just another one of the vigilantes.
Mm-hmm.
And even as the Justice Society, who I love, have returned over the years, and Dr. Midnight has kind of like been one of the ones that returned, they really haven't done much with the character. Honestly, the most they did with the character is when they changed him again in the 90s for another white guy, and he started having a relationship with Black Canary. And even that wasn't much. They did at one time make him, I think they made him a woman again at some time.
Yeah, that's where she comes from.
Well, she originally in the comics. In the comics.
Yeah.
But here she's a younger girl.
Right.
Here she's a young girl. But when they made her a Black woman in the mm-hmm. comics, and they just called her Midnight. Like, I don't think it was just called her Midnight. They got rid of the doctor and stuff. And they kind of like put her more in tights as opposed to like, cause he always had more of like a jacket and cape type of thing. It just didn't, I just didn't buy it. This I buy. This
All right.
I like.
All right.
And I think this is the best iteration of Dr. Midnight.
All right.
What do you say?
Sure.
We got to get the gap.
We'll allow it. We'll allow it.
Okay.
All right.
Very good.
All right.
All right. Number four.
Number four.
This is Aqualad.
Aqualad.
Aqualad, who historically.
Mm-hmm. White guy.
Was a white guy. Was
a white kid.
Was a white sidekick mm-hmm. of Aquaman
mm-hmm.
from the character from the
40s.
And then would go on to live in Filmation animation as the sidekick on the Aquaman short.
Sure.
And
sure.
as since he was the sidekick, he was also the part of the Teen Titans cartoon series mm-hmm. in the 60s mm-hmm. as well.
One of the harder Mego action figures to find.
Is he really?
Because of the gloves.
They
get lost.
Yeah. Do you have an Aqualad?
I don't.
No?
I'm not really a Mego person. I just know.
No, it's a hard
one. Right, it's a hard one to find.
For Young Justice,
mm-hmm.
which is another great animated DC series, you should check it out, ladies and gentlemen, that proposed to do kind of like a reworking of the sidekicks as a team in the DC universe. They totally remade the Aqualad character to a character named Calderon,
mm-hmm.
Voiced by Carrie Payton, a noted voice actor. He was an original character and protege of Aquaman with the same powers to be able to breathe underwater. But he also had this hydrokinesis, which was the ability to create like dense water weapons and stuff like that. He was actually, as opposed to historically in Teen Titans, where Robin, because of his association with Batman, was the lead, Aqualad in Young Justice was older than Robin, and mm-hmm. thus he was the leader of the team. And he proved to be the more natural leader of the team. They actually developed his character greatly over the four seasons. He would go on in the third season to actually mature to become actual Aquaman
mm-hmm.
in the Justice League. And he was also revealed just as a sign of the times to be a bisexual man who lived a bisexual lifestyle in the final season you saw there on screen. A fully formed character that in four seasons, they did more growth with this Aqualad on Young Justice than they did with the original Aqualad in, 50 years?
Oh, yeah.
Of comics?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, if you thought Aquaman was a joke in the comics, ladies and gentlemen, Aqualad was the punchline that they threw away.
Right.
So, I would say that Aqualad, the black Aqualad, for a lot of people, became the Aqualad so much so that they retrofit him into the comics. because of how popular he was on Young Justice.
Absolutely. And again, much like everyone we've talked about, since this is the one that most people know from mass media,
mm-hmm.
this is the one.
He's the one.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I gotta do the gap. All right.
There you go.
All right. I approve.
This next one might be controversial.
Okay.
Because I do believe that this may prove to be the better iteration.
Okay.
Time will tell.
Time will tell.
And that is Sam Wilson.
Oh.
As Captain America.
Captain America.
Now, Sam Wilson, who historically in the comics was the Falcon.
He's the Falcon, yeah.
But in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, he starts as the Falcon, portrayed by Anthony Mackie.
Mm-hmm.
He would be the sidekick, as in the comics, of Steve Rogers,
mm-hmm.
Captain America. Of course, Steve Rogers, the Captain America of old from World War II.
Sure.
Transplanted into today's time, who has since, in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, at least apparently retired as Captain America. We can't say that he's died, but he's retired as Captain America.
Sure.
And the mantle has been passed on to the Falcon,
mm-hmm.
who officially kind of like embraces the mantle in the Falcon and the Winter Soldier Disney Plus series. And now will be the star of the new Captain America movie, Captain America New World Order.
Right.
Time will tell whether or not he will be a better Captain America and prove to be everybody's Captain America. It's probably safe to say that he may not be everybody's Captain America just yet. But the character becomes Captain America in the comic books for a significant run. And a significantly popular run. I only dipped in and out of it, but from what I see, it read pretty well, and it was
solid.
People seem to embrace it, right? And I think because of the years and years of Captain America stories, much like with Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, any of your long-running stories, they tend to start kind of like recycling the same type
of
bits.
Sure.
Right? The idea of Sam Wilson, a black man, representing Captain America, and the different types of stories that can be pulled from there, they definitely play with it in the comics. And I think they start to lean on it a little bit with Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And I think that they're going to go there with New World Order, because we've even talked about it. It's interesting how quickly the Captain America Steve Rogers movies, as much as we enjoyed them, quickly they become Avengers movies.
Right.
Almost.
Right.
Right. And Sam Wilson's Captain America, I think, offers really the first opportunity since really the first Captain America movie for it to really be a Captain America movie that feels wholly different than anything else in the Marvel Cinematic
Universe. Yeah, I agree. It's actually similar to something I'm going to say in the review. I think the tension between the concept of Captain America and race,
yes,
in this case, blackness, really, as you said, affords some different narrative potential than you have.
Yeah.
With sort of, you know, a tall, blonde hair, blue eyed white man representing America. There's no tension there. Like everybody is always on board with that. And like you said, I thought one of the very smart things about a series that I think was smart was them leaning into that.
Yeah.
Like who gets to be patriotic?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I'm three for three.
Okay.
All right.
Number two is a no-brainer.
All right. And that would be?
That would be Nick Fury.
Nick Fury? Yeah.
Nick Fury, historically, for those who don't know, believe it or not, was a white man.
Yeah.
a white man who was a soldier in World War II.
Right, right, right.
Who then, through the miracle of whiteness, lasts forever.
Comics.
Yeah, comics. It's comic stuff. He becomes
Infinity
like...
Infinity formula.
That's what it was, mm-hmm. right? That because it couldn't be the super soldier.
No. Right. Something else.
Yeah, so something else. Some other
formula.
Some other juice and berries.
Right.
Junk that he, you know. It's funny how radioactivity works on white people.
Right.
So it makes him long lived
mm-hmm.
and becomes like the super soldier leader of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right.
In the ultimate comic book universe from the now 90s that I think.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Because they were kind of like, which was this opportunity for Marvel to kind of like remake the Marvel universe for like the 21st century audience, mm-hmm. In like a separate imprint, they decided that their Nick Fury in that universe was going to be fashioned after Samuel Jackson.
Right.
And that's pretty much the face that they drew for Samuel Jackson in that universe, which proved to be so popular
right.
that it is that iteration of Nick Fury, that iteration of the Avengers, that more or less is what you see in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Right.
And then they retrofit, of course, Nick Fury into the comics.
Yeah.
So that Nick Fury is a black man in the comics.
Yeah. It's sort of a version of the 007 issue that they're having now, that this sort of white man as this super spy
mm-hmm.
seems old fashioned.
Yeah.
And they figured out a way. Now, appropriately enough, following Captain America, you know, it ended up being Nick Fury because Mark Miller, who created Black Nick Fury, apparently, when they were, you know, as you said, doing these new versions
mm-hmm.
of these old characters. Apparently, he floated Captain America being black.
Oh,
because
did he?
Much like the truth, his theory was if the United States was experimenting on these soldiers,
mm-hmm.
they would have experimented on a black man
first. Right.
And so to him, he thought Captain America could have been a black man. Marvel said that, you know, okay, that you go a little bit too far with
get
that.
You Nick.
Right. Well, no. He said, since I can't do Captain America.
So then he went with Nick.
Right, because he thought black people in the military should be represented. And that's how you get Nick Fury.
Okay. Oh, I didn't know that entire backstory.
Right.
Oh, that's cool.
It was Mark Miller telling the story. And Mark Miller, much like Stan Lee,
yes.
you know.
He's never met a hype that he couldn't pearly.
I was about to say, he's a pinch of salt.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah, but
I think Nick Fury has the Samuel Jackson black Nick Fury. Like if Nick Fury is a black man now, for all intents and purposes.
And again, I think if you ask a person on the street, like if this sort of niche kind of hobby that we've like, we think about Nick Fury and Jim Steranko and all the great depictions of Nick mm-hmm. Fury in the comics. And there's maybe hundreds of thousands of us. Like if I'm concerned, you know, if I give you the greatest benefit of the doubt,
there's less every day.
There's like 100,000 of us. It's millions of people who, when they think of Nick Fury, they think of Samuel Jackson.
And so, he's a black man. All right.
And number one is, of course,
I'll let you say it.
Oh, of course it's John Stewart.
You're wrong. It's not John Stewart.
How is John Stewart not on the list?
One, because I wanted to zag.
It's not a zag if it's not accurate.
Well, hear me out.
All right. Hear me out. Go ahead.
One, we've already extolled the virtues of John Stewart. We just did it. And John Stewart should be black, but the shame of it is, as much as people like your nephew, you're like, oh my God, didn't know, like, you know, Green Lantern, you know, was white, you know, misconstrue that. DC is not going, seemingly, is not going to let Green Lantern, they're not going to let it go of Hal Jordan.
All right.
Now, there's talk that there might, with this Green Lantern series that they say is in production.
All right.
You know, it's minute. So as long as they're not going to let go of it, we're still living on Justice League.
All right.
Dream.
All right. This is real comic-y. This is a real comic-y episode. Who's number one?
Number one is the only time that a superhero was black and went black.
And that would be?
Your favorite hero.
Okay.
When, from the comics, Black Lightning became Black Vulcan on the Super Friends.
Boy, this is a real deeply comic episode.
But it's based on movies and TV.
It's based on movies and TV. You want to tell the story?
I will tell the story.
Black Lightning becomes Black Vulcan.
Now, Black Vulcan, ladies and gentlemen, is an African-American superhero on the animated series The Super Friends.
Yes.
Produced by Hanna-Barbera, voiced by one Buster Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Black Vulcan debuted in September of 1977. Unlike most of the Super Friends, Black Vulcan was not a pre-existing DC Comics character.
Right.
Technically. This is particularly notable because DC's roster did include an African-American superhero with electricity-based powers, much like Black Vulcan, who was named Black Lightning.
Mm-hmm.
Black Lightning could not be used on the Super Friends due to a dispute between DC and Black Lightning's creator, Tony Isabella.
Right, and the dispute was Tony Isabella actually owned part of the ownership of Black Lightning.
Right.
And unlike the creators of all of the other characters, DC hadn't screwed him out of his rights.
Exactly.
With the contracts. So the dispute was DC just didn't want to pay him.
Exactly. If Black Lightning was used on the show, DC would have had to cut their split, whatever licensing fee they got for Black Lightning with Tony Isabella.
Right.
And DC wasn't having
DC it. Wasn't going to do that.
So what they did was they created Black Vulcan in retaliation for because they didn't want to use Black Lightning.
Not cool, DC.
Not cool at all, DC. Black Vulcan, who was a horrible looking character. He was horrible.
He had no pants. Like, the people of color didn't have pants.
His
like him, Samurai, and
El Diablo.
El Diablo.
Yeah, that's one. The superhero.
They were the minority superheroes, and none of them had pants.
They were all very, very just. It was not good.
All right.
It's not good stuff. Do you remember what Black Vulcan's catchphrase was?
Didn't he just yell out Black Vulcan?
No. His catchphrase was Great Lightning. Now, do you know what Tony Isabella tried to kind of like do to kind of like, you know, his little subtle commentary on this?
I did not.
In Black Lightning number 10, the actual comic book around the time, he wrote a story called The Other Black Lightning.
Okay.
Where he fought a criminal named Barbara Hanna.
Subtle.
Of Riff on Hanna-Barbera, yeah. And who had a circus where they hired a Black Lightning imposter named Jocko. At the end of the episode, Black Lightning and Jocko make up, and Black Lightning believes that Jocko could strike out on his own, that is, if he stops imitating him. But Tony Isabella says, unfortunately, I don't think anybody noticed what I was doing, and he didn't hear anything about it. So that's my zag.
That's your zag.
And when a black superhero actually went black.
All right. You don't get a gavel for that.
I don't get a gavel for that?
Gavel for that.
That's a good zag.
No gavel.
You know what? I'll give you that.
I have to have the integrity of the gavel.
I'll give you that. The only reason why I don't deserve the gavel is because there actually has been a Black Lightning TV series.
Yes.
If there hadn't been a Black Lightning TV series, some people might not never know of Black Lightning. They might only know of Black Vulcan.
They might only know Black Vulcan, and now they know the rest of the story.
And knowing is half the battle.
The other half is laser beams and violence.
All right, let's keep it moving. Let's keep it moving.
Robust.
It is time for 6 degrees of Derville Martin.
That's the key. Why you'd be surprised what a person can do with just a sense of touch and a sense of sound.
Six degrees of Derville Martin, ladies and gentlemen, where I give Vincent two actors and he has to connect with them in six movies or less. Two, the original Black Lightning.
Derville Martin.
Derville Martin.
That is Negro electricity. He's electric.
Boogie.
That's right.
All right.
All right.
Are you ready, Vincent?
All right. Is it thematic?
It is thematic.
All right.
Because without using their most recent film,
okay,
I'm going to use the stars of Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Okay. All right. Who we got?
So starting with?
With?
Shameik Moore.
How do you get to Shameik Moore? Well, this is how you get to Shameik Moore. Derville Martin.
Mm-hmm.
Is in. I don't want to get to Shameik Moore. Okay. Derville Martin is in Five on the Black Hand Side with Dick Anthony Williams, who is in Mo' Betta Blues with Samuel Jackson, who is in the Shaft remake with Jeffrey Wright, who is in The Batman with Zoe Kravitz, who was in Dope with Shameik Moore.
I forgot Zoe Kravitz was in Dope.
Mm-hmm.
She is in Dope.
With Shameik Moore. Yeah.
Very good, Vincent. I thought you were going to go to Dope. I just didn't know you were going to go through.
I don't know what other movie he's in besides Dope.
He's in Joyful Noise.
Oh.
Is he?
Yeah. That's the Dolly Parton, Queen Latifah one?
Yeah.
I did not know he was in that.
Yeah. And oh, man, that's good. I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, very good. Very good, Vincent. Speaking of Five on the Black Hand Side, ladies and gentlemen.
Marketing.
We are going to be doing and hosting a live screening and doing a live podcast of Five on the Black Hand Side on Wednesday, July 19th at the Bryn Mawr Film Institute, 7 p.m. Tickets are on sale now. You can find links on our website, or even if you're checking us out on Twitter or on Instagram, it's up there in the link tree. You can find links because tickets are on sale now. We are going to be streaming. It's a Derville summer.
Yeah.
It's a Derville summer.
It's not just an integral part of our freak show every week.
No, it is not. It is not. And it's actually a great movie.
Great movie.
You will actually love it, and we're going to have a lot of fun.
We're going to have a good time.
Very good time.
All right,
Vincent.
All right, so who else we got?
Next we have, that was Miles Morales.
That was Miles Morales.
So that means that we have to go next to Gwen Stacy. So in six movies or less, Vincent, connect Derville Martin to one Hailee Steinfeld.
Right. Yeah, here's the problem. I don't know anything she's in at all.
Oh, wow. She's in one of my favorite movies. Well, okay. Spider-Man notwithstanding.
What's your favorite movie with her?
She is in one of my favorite movies of the last, full doubt. It's got to be over 10 years.
Oh, what would that be?
You don't know any movie that she's been in?
I'm sure she's been in something and I didn't notice her.
Yeah, she was actually in a couple of movies.
What's your favorite movie?
That she was in True Grit.
The remake of True Grit?
Mm-hmm.
Who is... That's not Tom Hanks.
No.
Who who's a big guy in True Grit?
I can't tell you, Vincent. You got to figure that out.
How can I figure it if I don't know it?
Well, and then you have to choose another movie.
Well, give me another movie then, because I don't know who's in.
Why are you watching a remake of True Grit?
It's a good movie.
Is it? Have you seen it?
I haven't, but just, you know. All right, go ahead.
It's the movie that really where she got her start.
All right, what else?
She was nominated for an Oscar.
Sure, why not? What else is she in?
Sometimes manly. She was in
some old white guy says she was really good in it. You can't trust old white guys. Who can you trust?
She was good in it.
I know she was nominated for an Oscar.
You no, because I saw it.
All so right, go ahead, she just was tell good. Me, give me something else.
Now I'm going to give you something hard. I was going to give you an easy one.
Mm-hmm.
She was in. That was just a cameo. She was in Bumblebee.
Bumblebee talking.
Yeah, because you talk smack. She was in Bumblebee.
Oh, so it's now I'm gonna pick an obscure movie that you've never heard
of. It's not an obscure movie.
Bumblebee?
Yeah, it was a Transformers movie.
Oh.
So it ain't obscure.
Oh, a Transformers movie.
Yeah, but it's Bumblebee, so it's not Transformers.
All right.
So do you know who else was in Bumblebee?
Optimus Prime is in it, right?
I don't think so, actually. It's been a while since I've seen it. I don't believe Optimus was in there. No. Thought you were going to get over. Oh, no, he is.
Okay. And the same dude who's been voicing Optimus Prime voices Optimus Prime.
If you don't give me his name, that ain't going to count.
Really?
Yeah, because I want to talk smack. You want to talk smack.
Well, then we just sit here forever then. What's the guy's name who voices Optimus Prime?
Peter Cullen.
And it's been him.
Yes.
Like since the cartoon, right?
Yes.
Okay. There you go. Dervil Martin, and this is going to be nice. Dervil Martin is of course in Hell Up in Harlem with Fred Williamson.
Okay.
Fred Williamson is in Through the Hard Way with Jim Brown.
Okay.
Jim Brown is in, let me see, I don't think I'll run out. Right, so I'm just going to hit it. Jim Brown is in Hit with Donald Sutherland.
Yes.
Donald Sutherland is in the remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers with Leonard Nimoy.
Yes.
Leonard Nimoy is in Transformers, the animated movie, with Peter Cullen. Peter Cullen is in Bumblebee with Haley Steinfeld.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I should ding you, because the movie's not called The Hit. It's called The Split.
The Split, right.
Yeah. But I'm not going to ding you.
Mm-hmm.
But okay.
Because you like how I jumped from Peter Cullen. You like that Peter Cullen.
I gave you Peter Cullen.
I mean, I knew who he was. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know the guy who voiced Optimus Prime. The guy who's made his career out of voicing Optimus Prime.
You should have known her co-stars in True Grit. Clint Eastwood and Matt Damon.
Yeah, see? Old grumpy Clint Eastwood in a remake.
Oh, not Clint Eastwood.
Oh, so you don't even know who, you're mixing up your old white guys. Oh, no, not Lynn mixing up his old white guys. Whatever shall we do?
It's not a Clint Eastwood. It's, don't tell me.
I'm not going to say.
Jeff Bridges.
Oh, there you go.
It's Jeff Bridges.
Jeff Bridges.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Playing a John Wayne role.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Boy, how could I have sat that one out?
It's a good movie.
That's what I
you
hear.
You like Westerns.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It's a good movie. It's better than the original. Because the original sucks. The original is John Wayne.
Really? You don't like True Grit?
Well, first of all, I can't watch any John Wayne movies anymore.
Okay.
Because I've learned a lot of
just because of who he is.
Yes. But
True Grit is good, though.
No.
Like, I don't really, obviously, I don't rock with John Wayne, but I like True Grit. It's good.
All right. I don't think this is better. You should see it, Vincent, before you say it. Jeff Bridges a better actor than John
Wayne. Did they dig up John Ford to direct it?
Okay. No.
Okay, but it's still...
Like, I don't believe you got me over here defending John Ford and John Wayne, but, you know, right is right.
Well, I'll defend John Ford. He's a
great director. Yeah, like, right is right.
Well,
like, who directed this?
The Coen Brothers.
Oh, now that's interesting. Okay, now I'm intrigued.
See?
You should have led with that.
Well, I didn't. I led when it was good. It wasn't enough that I said it was good.
No. And you didn't. He was nominated for an Academy Award.
She was nominated.
She was nominated.
She was good at it.
All right.
She was a very young girl in that movie.
True Grit the remake is a good movie. So saith Lynn. It was nominated for an Academy Award.
All right. Real quick. Let's try and make this real quick. We went to Bartram High School this week. Last week.
Correct.
For like, you know, just talking about the podcast, talking about podcast. We had a great time.
We did. Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you. Shout out to Bartram High School.
Right. A lot of kids.
And we played 6 Degrees of Derville Martin there.
Yes.
For the kids. And Vince wowed them like he wowed everybody.
Right.
But then one of the students put me the task. She said, well, you're just standing there giving him the actors.
You're just standing there giving... Why don't you participate?
Why don't you participate?
Right.
So she challenged me to...
She did.
...to 6 Degrees of Derville Martin.
Yeah.
I did it.
You did.
I did.
You did.
I stumbled a little
bit. Well, you know.
Because...
Hey, look.
I stumbled a little bit.
Yeah.
But I felt some kind of way.
Yeah.
I felt seen.
Yeah.
And I didn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
So give me one.
Give you one?
Yeah, give me one.
Let me give you one real quick. Let's see. Hello, I'm like, all right, here's one for you, Lynn. 6 moves or less, you connect Derville Martin to Doris Day.
Doris Day?
Doris Day.
Okay. How do I want to get to Doris Day?
Mm-hmm. It's old-timey.
Very old-timey. Doris Day. I got to think of her movies. Okay. Got two. Got an actor. Connect them to... It's 6 movies or less, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Derville Martin is in... Chiza. Doris Day. It's not as hard as it seems. Oh. Derville Martin is in Guess Who's Coming to Dinner with Sidney Poitier.
Mm-hmm.
Sidney Poitier is in... Sidney Poitier is in... Where I want to go. I know it's, I need to get there.
Mm-hmm.
I need to get to him.
Want some help?
No.
Okay.
I don't want any help. Sidney Poitier is in The Defiant Ones with Tony Curtis.
Yep. Yes, he is.
Tony Curtis is in... I need to get to him. Tony Curtis is in... Okay, Tony Curtis is in The Great Race with Jack Lemmon. Jack Lemmon is in... Oh, what was the movie? What was the movie with... Shites, that's the wrong white guy. Jack Lemmon is in... Don't help me.
Now I picked somebody to use all these segregation era ass movies.
No, I've got the connective tissue. I've got to get to.
You had to sit in a balcony to watch it.
I've got to get to this.
Off the steps, colored boy.
Shut up. Leave me alone. Who am I at? I'm at Jack Lemmon, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many movies is that? That's 3. Sidney Poitier, Tony Curtis, Jack Lemmon.
Mm-hmm.
That's 3, right? All right, so Jack Lemmon is in. I know the movie I want to end with.
Oh yeah, not as easy as it looks, is it?
I never said it was easy. Shut up.
Jack Lemmon is in Irma LaDouche.
Of course.
With Kim Novak.
Sure.
Kim Novak is in Vertigo with Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah, that's true.
Who is in The Man Who Knew Too Much with Doris Day.
All right. There you go. Well done.
Boom. Yes.
Old timey, 6 degrees.
Old timey.
6 degrees of separation.
Ooh.
All right.
All right.
It's like half of the movies Derville Martin couldn't have been in. You got the sandwiches? What you doing here?
To be fair, he would have been a child. That's why he couldn't have been in them.
Right. That's why.
That's why.
That's
why. He would have been a child.
Right.
Otherwise, sure.
Sure,
we'd have found room for him.
Right. He could have had a musical number that could easily be edited out when we send it to the Southern theaters.
Anyway, all right. So, I did it.
Yeah, right.
Hey, you ready to...
Guess you showed that 15-year-old girl who apparently has haunted you since last week.
All right, we got to get Daryl in.
Come on, let's go.
Let's go. Put down the gavel. Let's bring in Daryl Charles, ladies and gentlemen, and get into our review of Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
We'll be right back with our movie review after we step to these messages.
I can hear you being quiet, Mom.
Hope I didn't ice your game, man.
No one my age says those words in that order.
It's just hard to see my little man not being my little boy all the time.
Yeah.
You know, for years I've been taking care of this little boy. Making sure he is loved. That he feels like he belongs wherever he wants to be. He wants to go out into the world and do great big things.
Not bad, kid.
And what I worry about most...
I love you, Miles.
...is they won't look out for you like us.
Miles!
Want to get out of here? Wherever you go from here, you have to promise to take care of that little boy for me. Make sure he never forgets where he came from. And he never doubts that he is loved. And he never lets anyone tell him that he doesn't belong there. You gotta promise, Miles.
I promise.
Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, a 2023 computer animated superhero film featuring the Marvel Comics character Miles Morales, aka Spider-Man. This is a sequel to Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, the Academy Award-winning Best Animated Feature from 2018, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. This film, directed by Joaquin DeSantos, Kemp Powers, and Justin Thomas, from a script by Phil Lord and Christopher Miller with David Callahan, features Miles and Gwen Stacy, a.k.a. One Spider-Woman, going across the multiverse where he meets a new team of spider people known as the Spider Society, but comes into conflict with them over handling a new threat called the Spot. This film features the voices voice work of Shameik Moore and Haley Steinfeld in the lead roles, but it also features Brian Tyree Henry, Lauren Velez, Jake Johnson, Jason Schwartzman, Issa Rae, Karen Sani, Shea Whigham, Greta Lee, Daniel Kaluuya, Oscar Isaac, Mahershala Ali.
Ooh, spoil. Well, I guess we should do.
Yeah, sorry. In a film that was the number one film this year. I mean, not this year, excuse me, this past week in the box office, grossing over $120 million in 3 days this weekend. And joining us, Vincent and I, for our review of Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is the one, the only, Daryl Charles of the DTF Fun Hour. Comedian Daryl Charles, you can check at Punchline Comedy Theater June 30th here in Philadelphia, and the sexiest comedian in America. What's up, Daryl?
That's what we do. I shaved for this. Hello. Hi. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. I appreciate the warm words and the kindness, and also the seat next to between y'all at the screening that we were at for Spider-Man.
It's a good time. Good time.
It was a great time. I've seen it again. Did you see it again?
I have seen it again.
I have also seen it again.
Yeah, that's what I figured. I mean, we all kind of said that when we walked out. It was like, yeah, I can't wait to see this again.
Yeah.
So and I think then that kind of spoils the review, right?
We should probably put a disclaimer on top, though.
Yes.
Because this is the review that we will have, and we review films in its entirety. This episode is being taped less than a week after it's come out.
Yes.
So perhaps people have not seen it yet. It is a film that I think we can all agree you should see without knowing, like you should know as least as possible going in.
Yes, you should.
I think it is also safe to assume, I haven't spoken to either of them, but I'm going to speak for them. All three of us heartily recommend it if that's what you're waiting for. Yeah. But this will be a spoiler-filled review. If you've not seen it, turn us off, go listen to the review of Enter the Spider-Verse. Come back, we'll be here.
Well, don't turn it off just yet.
Don't turn You know, as soon as I said turn it off, they, oh my Lord,
and then they turn it off.
Yeah.
Now they go turn it back on, like, oh.
So for the three of you in our families who are still watching, don't turn it off just yet, because we're going to start with just some, like, just our thoughts in general on the film before we then get into the spoilers.
Thoughts?
Yes, we like it.
They fold in spoilers.
Well, I think you can still kind of, at least we recommend the movie, but let's put it this way. Outside of without spoiling the film, is there one thing, if the three of us can come up with at least one thing that we would say to recommend the reason why people should see this movie?
It's a well done piece of art. The colors, the animation,
yeah,
the way that they're able to juggle the different styles of animation, like they hinted at it in the first one, they mastered it for the second one. I'll say that.
Yeah.
I think it's a lovely family film with some really good messaging, especially given the attacks on some identities today.
Mm-hmm.
It all has to do with identity and fitting in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a great message. And I think I was saying when we watched it, I was like, I can't wait for terrible white men to jump all over this movie. I think it's, yeah. And so that's where I'll go with it.
It's amazing to me. I was noting that this was the number one film in the country this year. The number two film is The Little Mermaid.
Yeah, about that.
So how about that? It's two black leads leading the two number two.
Well, the funny thing, the theater that I went to for the second viewing, it was a lot of black folks.
Yeah,
like a lot of black families.
Yeah,
and I assumed everyone was going to funnel into, you know, the Spider-Verse.
Mm-hmm.
But you actually saw the wave
split.
Yeah. And, you know, it was like waves of little girls and a smattering of boys going into the Little Mermaid and a wave of little boys with a smattering of girls going into Spider-Verse. And
I know.
So everybody had their own film. I think this is a, not surprisingly, I think surprisingly because of how we think about animation, well-made and mature script.
Yes. Yes.
Like, I think the script is so well done.
Mm-hmm.
And I would, you know, and I think, obviously, the animation is the big selling point because it's just, it really is a masterpiece.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think the script is what's going to keep people watching this again and again.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of agree with you. And we can touch on, because Daryl brought up about like how the animation styles and the colors of it. We'll touch on that as we get deeper into the film. But the thing that I will say of the recommend is that if you only go by the trailers and the commercials for the movies, it seems that there is a lot of attention paid to the idea that Spider-Man is running around with a whole bunch of Spider-Men around him, right? And this is just Easter Egg City as far as movies goes. And it is Easter Egg City.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the fears that you had, well, at least that I had going into this movie, was that coming off of the success of a Spider-Verse movie, for them now to be doing the sequel and it also focusing around the Spider-Verse, was that they would lose Miles in the movie, right? And he just become one of the tapestry.
Mm-hmm.
But he still is very much prominent in this movie. And he is, not only is he prominent, but there is even more built up into his family structure as well. You spend time with his mom, his father. You actually spend time with a couple more of his relatives as well to see both sides of their family. And I think to Daryl's point, with so many, you know, things in regards to identity and how we live and who we are being attacked in this country right now, I think for the number one film in the country to be a film that embraces who we are truly and puts it with absolutely no caveat, no harness, no excuses, right there full blown and beautiful colors on the movie screen, is something to celebrate and something to champion people going to the movies to see.
All right.
Also, given what you said, like, I don't think this happened in the first movie. I need to watch it again. But like, there were scenes where it was just his mom and dad talking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Without Miles. And they were talking about trying to raise him. And I was like, oh man, you know, like I know that they were pulling at the heartstrings about parenthood and about watching your child become an adult and all that stuff. And I was like, oh man, if I had kids, I'd probably be tearing up right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I've made better decisions.
Oh God. All right. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't want to be spoiled on Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, pause the podcast now and return to it after you see the film. Trust me, you will be rewarded for doing it this way.
All right.
All right.
All right.
We are about to go in.
Yes.
All right.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Daryl.
Yeah.
What you got to say about Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse?
I cannot wait for the third movie. I think that this, like, oh my God.
Yes. Yes.
Like the way, like, okay. So the way the movie starts is pretty much directly as the first movie ended, but it starts with Gwen. So it, mm-hmm. you know, it doesn't go over a backstory, but it goes into Gwen's universe.
Exactly.
To mm-hmm. talk about what she did up until the point at the end of the first movie. She opens up a portal and says, hey, what you doing, right? Like, that's how the first movie ends. So, like, just the continuity, the attention to detail to do that. It's just like, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And then they end it with the entire, you know, multiversal ensemble, the multiversal Avengers jumping in to go and save him. Come on, man.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
I know. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. I don't know if you thought about it. I didn't even know that they were planning a third one. I had no idea that that's what was going to happen. And I was sitting there in the last few minutes, one, checking my watch, being like, my parking's about to run out. But two, being like, how are they going to wrap this up?
Right, right. A friend of mine actually told me that they did let out that there was going to be a third film. But I purposefully had stayed away from like any stories about stuff. Sure. Like once I first saw the first trailer, I was like, all right, I want to see the movie. I never even watched the trailer again. I said, I know I'm in. I'm good. Y'all got me. I don't need to see nothing. Right. I don't need to read nothing. I don't need nothing. I'm going in cold. But when you live in the world of comic books and stuff like that, you know, and I do another podcast that talks about comic books, you kind of know that type of stuff. But I too did not know that there was going to be another movie. So the whole time I'm watching it, as I'm realizing, like, there's a lot of story that's going, and we'll go over the story, but it's like, yo, this movie been going on a little while.
Yeah.
And shit ain't wrapping up. Like, they still introducing stuff. I'm like, they are not going to finish this movie. They are not. I'm sitting there like, they're not going to part two. Are they going to part two? Oh my God, are they going to part? I am so anxious because I want all of those kids that were in that theater, especially our second time watching, mm-hmm. the second time I watched it with like, you know, a regular audience. I want all of those kids that had the same feeling that I had back in 1980.
That's right.
When I went to see Empire Strikes Back, mm-hmm. and you saw Han Solo put into what? Carbonite?
Carbonite. That's
And you were like, and the movie went off, and I'm like, are you out of your mind? What? Yeah. What? No. And I wanted to hear that gasp from the kids.
Yeah.
But kids are so trained that there was the gasp, and then they were like, okay, Spider-Man, we with you, Spider-Man.
Well, because like Empire Strikes Back, which, you know, was my immediate, because I knew it was going to be three parts.
Oh, you knew?
Yeah, I knew. And my concern was it was just going to be kind of this elongated thing that the suits had gotten involved and we're going to make as much money as we can off of this.
Sure.
I was concerned that the second film wouldn't be its own entity.
Okay, fair enough.
And
right.
Of these trilogies that we've all kind of lived through, I can't think of another one after Empire Strikes Back, which frankly, you know, I think happened much more organically than things have happened over the past 20 years. This is a distinct movie experience.
Mm-hmm.
So that much like Empire Strikes Back, where, you know, even the most casual Star Wars fan will say Empire is the best one. And people watch Empire by itself. I don't know if this will be better than the third one. Like, you know, at this point, I don't think you should have any reservations about the Spider-Verse team.
Sure.
Like, just trust them that they know what they're doing and they're going to do things better than anyone has done it.
Right.
But if this is the best of the three, I think this lives by itself.
Yeah.
From now on.
Yeah.
Because it ends on a quote unquote cliffhanger. But it ends much like the Empire Strikes Back ends, where things are unresolved,
mm-hmm.
but you've had a full film experience.
You feel full.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the character progression and growth has happened for those people. They've all moved on and, you know, they've all grown from the experiences they had in the movie. It is satisfying in that way. And then it's like, oh, man, like I think that the whole third movie is going to be a fight. Like it's just going to be one fight.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
I don't see them taking no breaks in the third movie.
Right.
I don't see how, but you know, well, obviously there's, you know, many multiverses in the spot and all that crap, but
yeah.
But, yeah. Yeah.
Right. You spoke about how the movie opens up in Gwen's world, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is their first opportunity to do, like what you said, was create this totally different palette and animation style in all of the different worlds that they journey to. Because as opposed to the first one where, you know, like these other spider entities came and visited into Miles' world, Miles is now going to these different worlds. And each of them has a different language, a different color palette, starting with Gwen's, which is very like heavy watercolors.
Yeah.
And the watercolors kind of like, you know, speak to the mood that she's going
very
through.
Very moody,
atmospheric. But then.
And pretty much the colors of the trans flag.
Yes.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And I mean, like, I don't want to. It's not a bad critique, but like they were heavy handed in the subtext of Gwen's entire thing being a parallel for the trans existence. But I thought that was just a beautiful note.
I mean, so much of it is like I thought it was really notable that at the end, when Miles is about to tell what he thinks is his mother, his secret identity, Lauren Vallis's vocal performance and the way the film is, it like the way it's set up, it looks like a coming out moment.
Yeah,
like you get the sense that she thinks he's about to tell her that he's gay. So I think you're right that so much of this is tied up that you can see these parallels, these different parallels of identity throughout.
Yeah,
and you know, like we say about these master filmmakers. And even though this is very early work by a lot of these directors.
Joaquin DeSantos, like, he made his bones on animated cartoons.
Animated cartoons.
He's noted for on Justice League, Avatar, The Last Airbender, Korra. Yeah.
Justin Thompson is really known as a production designer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but I don't think it's hyperbole to say that these are three directors who are in control of every aspect.
And Ken Powers, he
co-directed Soul.
Soul, right.
So that I think this multi-level symbolism is deliberate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know.
And when well handled. Like, it's not clunky. It doesn't interfere with, like, action sequences or...
No, not at all.
Bring the movie to a terrible halt. I will say this. When I watched the second time, I watched it with my wife. And we went, you know, regular public. And there were kids just talking and cracking up. Like, teenagers being teenagers during the movie. And I was like, man, I'm so happy we don't have kids. And, my wife was like, no, you have to remember the teenage boys started goofing around at every emotional point in the movie.
Oh, really?
Because they can't be emotional in front of their friends.
They're uncomfortable. Right? Yeah.
Right. That discomfort made them joke around. And I was like, because it did match. Because it was like the action sequences, everybody quiet. Mm-hmm. But then when it got into the feelings and the emotions and like the interplay between Gwen and her dad was just like, oh man, just talk about acting, man. It was doing it.
Yeah. That's Haley Steinfeld and Shea Whigham as her father. That actually like really got me, especially the way that, again, with the colors and everything, right? And also with the colors, but also just with the transitions. There's a cool transition early when Gwen leaves her house and you see her walking the street.
Yeah.
And then she passes one person. The camera is still behind her as she's walking the street. She passes one person and almost effortlessly she's on the subway now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that is actually thinking as a cinematographer, but then folding in the advantage that animation gives you. You're allowing you to do that, man. And it was so beautifully handled, man.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, that moment still stays with me. I see it all.
Well, and I think in a lot of ways, I love the decision to bookend it with Gwen's voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it really speaks to something. Because I'm an unabashed Miles Morales fan, like the comic books, the whole deal. And I think what keeps drawing me to him as a character is I see this real tension in this character, this Miles Morales character, because so much of Spider-Man, which, you know, I thought it was such a great decision because I think about it all the time, that they deal with in the movie, that tragedy is so much a part of what makes Spider-Man, Spider-Man. Like from the very beginning, he is defined by these tragedies. It's the tears of a clown. It's everything. But Miles Morales, as this real 21st century creation, is like the personification of black boy joy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So like, how do you reconcile this black boy joy with this kind of Spider-Man weight?
Right, right. And the pathos of Spider-Man.
And when you know, I love that you get that like 10-minute sequence with Spider-Gwen where you see the price that she's paid, that you see.
Right.
And then so that when the Rakim drops,
mm-hmm.
and it's just bright poppy, and it's just the Miles Morales world, and it's, you know, it's just such... I just love his Brooklyn so much. Like, I love the fact that for the first couple of shots, he's just in the background.
Yeah.
You know, he's just energy, and he's pure, and he's effervescent, and he's just, and then when you see him, you know, he's a teenage boy.
Yeah.
He needs something to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And then he cracks jokes, but because you've had this grounding of Gwen, you have that kind of hanging over it.
Yeah.
Like one thing that I thought that really struck me the very first time we saw it is when he's in this kind of madcap kind of tussle with the Spot.
Yeah.
And he and his father, and it's almost like something out of Buster Keaton.
Mm-hmm.
And his father falls, and then he saves him, but it's played very comedically.
Yeah.
Like he just kind of sets him up. But you know, his dad almost died just now.
Right, right.
Like his dad almost died just now. But this is, you know, as the film tells you, he's not gone through this canonical moment.
Right,
right.
You know, they kind of, you know, they reinforce it with Praveter, the Indian Spider-Man.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, oh, yes.
How as soon as he says being Spider-Man is the easiest thing on earth. You know, you haven't been Spider-Man that long.
Right, right.
And then sure enough, you hear. So I love the fact that the film is grappling with that.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact that not only are these great animators, not only are these great directors, these are people that have thought about this character and thought about Spider-Man. And thought about these themes.
Yeah.
You know, many of us over the years have pulled, you know, kind of, you know, we inferred it and we put this on it, but now so much of the subtext gets to be the text.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And you get these, you know, you almost don't want to call them set pieces.
Like the action,
I love when Gwen says, when, you know, it's like they have the first set piece in the museum where the film lets you know we're also making art.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's, you know.
And the film is actually making a commentary on the art as it like falls in the museum. It's like, ooh, yeah, I like that.
I think that's a Banksy. Yeah. It's just, yeah, man. They really like, and that's the part about it. Like, I think that all of these superhero movies are best executed when they like the idea that they're superheroes, the idea that we're in this fantasy comic book world is just the world that they live in. And then we get to tell stories on top of that.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Like The Winter Soldier is a great spy movie as regardless of super serums and Captain America and S.H.I.E.L.D. Right. The Ant-Man movies are heist movies, regardless of the fact that you can shrink and all that stuff. this movie is like a meditation on Spider-Man and like, you know, are you defined by your pain or are you defined by your hope for the future?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I want every child to watch that.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And think about that because it's such a, great point to bring up.
Just a coda to your story. You suspect the teenagers that were joking because they were uncomfortable because they were with each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know they're going to watch this by themselves, though.
I was just about to say that same thing.
Yeah.
They're going to watch it by themselves and they're going to see it. They're going it's going to hit them and they're going to really like reconcile with it, you know, because
it's gonna make them hug their moms or something like that.
Yo, it will, man. It will. Mm-hmm. It'll make you hug your mom and make you look at your dad a little differently, man. There is. You talked about like the commentary that it has on parenting in this film, which it is rife with, but none of the parents are perfect.
Right.
It's amazing to me that in a cartoon the parents are real. They feel like just like real parents, a real couple.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, oh yeah.
How they interacted with one another. Mm-hmm. Like just everything just
struggling.
Just felt so and you know, Shameik Moore and Haley Steinfeld, they kill it in the lead roles.
Absolutely.
As Miles Morales.
Oh yeah.
And Gwen Stacy. You just talked about Lauren Velez. But for me, the voice that just kept hitting me was Brian Tyree Henry as his father.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, because dude, if he did not sound like my dad, I don't know if he sounded like your dad. He sound like every dad, man.
He's doing the best he can.
Yes.
He's doing the best he can.
To be honest, he sound like me sometimes when you're thinking about dealing with my daughter. I was like living in that moment, man. And especially the moment, such a good moment where he is talking to Spider-Man about Miles.
Yeah.
I was like, that is great. Like, maybe you just got to let him sweat it.
Right, right, right.
What? I do. You know what? And that's another. It's the thing that takes the movie from just being good to being great is all the small things. But I do love the fact that both Gwen and Miles just lower their voice when they're speaking to their parents.
Right. That's their disguise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just fun to see, like, yeah, Haley Steinfeld's voice being like, yeah, just stay there, Captain.
Right.
Right. And funny. Let me ask y'all a question, because again, watch one trailer, that was it.
Right.
I had no idea who the villain in this movie was.
No.
But if I had known that the villain was the Spot, who maybe is pulled from the comics, I don't remember.
Yeah, it's a deep pull.
Okay.
It's definitely a pull.
Because I kind of remember him in a Daredevil comic.
Right, right. But it's a deep pull. It's pretty, yeah.
And it was a pull that they pulled. And they definitely played around with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because if you had told me that the Spot was a villain, the main villain in this, mm-hmm. I'd be like, okay, let's see how this is going to work.
All right.
He
was a villain of the week.
They made the Spot maybe the villain of the year because they made him work.
Look, again, when you have the Spot after Spider-Gwen sort of existential exploration of the sacrifices and I don't have any friends and this, that, and the other. And, you know, he's Madcap.
Mm-hmm.
But there is, like, I thought he was perfect because in each part of the film, he fit.
Yes.
Like, yeah. That early part, you know, again, it's just sort of screwball comedy.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of, you know, you have the great visual gags. But even that moment with the bread falling out is a little disturbing.
It just...
It's...
You just want to say that again?
Yeah. It's a little kind of
just a hint of what's to come.
It's just a hint of what's to come. So that when he progresses to that final image.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk about playing around with it.
With a little bit of white.
Yeah.
Remember, he starts out white with black splotches. He turns around and it's like, and it shows the gravity of the situation. Like you're genuinely scared of this villain and what he can do. I can't wait for the third movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was interesting that while he is the spot in the beginning, the whole movie is really the origin of the spot that he is to come. And he just becomes more ominous and dangerous throughout the movie to the point where like, yo, we got to take this dude seriously.
Yeah.
Because now he's about to mess some stuff up.
Right. Yeah.
Most definitely, man. Oh my God. You said that this movie, we're big in here selling the movie and we're selling it for like the bigger themes.
Sure. Sure.
But like we said, it's the Spider-Verse. It's an Easter egg delight.
Oh my goodness. Like, yeah, I was like, they must have somebody on staff just reading comics.
Oh, absolutely. And what a job.
What a job.
What a job. Because there, there are deep cuts. There are more recent cuts.
Mm-hmm.
There are fan favorite cuts. There, and I love the fact that you got the sense that if they train the camera on any of them, they could be an actual character.
Yeah.
Because I was looking forward to Spider-Punk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just because I like to, he's a fairly new character, like from the past 3 or 4 years.
Right.
But there is absolutely no way I thought that we would have this.
I know. Mm. I know. Hobie Brown, Spider-Punk, voiced by Daniel Kaluuya.
How?
I mean, out here just being as dazzling as he's been in every other thing I've seen him in.
How amazing is this character?
How are you even cooler underneath your mask?
How are you even cooler under the mask? Actually, I've been this cool the whole time. I said, you know what, man? You are.
You are, dog. Yeah. You are. Yeah, I was not ready for him either, man.
And again, I think this is a film that's going to reward you viewing after viewing after viewing.
Dude, there are people who are stopping. Yeah. Like, they can't wait to be able to stop this drawing.
Because even with the second viewing, what you realize is that Hobie Brown, from the very moment he comes on the screen, is setting up helping Miles.
Exactly.
Yeah, he knows he's the one from the moment he shows up.
Like, he's pulling the stuff off the wall.
Off the
and
wall.
I'm like, right, because he's going to build his own. Like, he's like the most spider of the Spider-Men.
Yep.
Like, mm-hmm. he's joking in this snap, but he's like, pay attention to this hand, and then this hand is doing the work.
Yes. Yes. I did peep that.
Loved him so much.
I loved him so much. Who I also loved, and I could have done with a lot more of, because it was a total reworking, at least as far as I know, of the Jessica Drew Spider-Woman character.
Yeah.
Because this Spider-Woman rides a motorcycle.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is badass and black.
Yes.
And Issa Rae, I loved every bit of it.
Well, if we have to dig into the comics.
Is that Jessica Drew black in the comics?
No. That Jessica Drew is based on a redesign from the Jessica Drew is white in the comics. But she was pregnant and she did have a motorcycle. But that Jessica Drew with the afro is, I believe, a reference to, do you remember the Spidey reader comics? From the 70s?
I read this. Yes, yes, yes. That was the Spidey from the Electric Company.
From the Electric Company.
The comic book adaptation, yes.
There was a one-off
of,
I think she was a librarian.
Yes.
And she had a big afro, and she was a Spider-Woman. And she actually predated Jessica Drew.
Right, right.
So the first Spider-Woman was actually black, and I believe that was a reference to her.
I did read somewhere that they think that it was a reference that. They haven't had anybody confirm it yet. But I did read that. Yo, that's... Damn.
Dude, that's a deep cut. Man.
Look.
That's the deepest cut.
Look, I was going to say this to the end, but we're talking. I have one note. I have one note for this entire film, and I'm almost certain that they're keeping it for the third one. Manga Spider-Man strolled down the hallway in one scene.
Yes.
Hmm. Penny Parker, obviously, is the more current anime Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
I need Japanese Spider-Man to show up from the 70s with the big robot.
With the big robot.
And the armband.
I don't know, man.
I believe he'll show up for the third one.
I don't know. That might be a good one.
And we do know the Spider-Verse team are missionaries. So if you all haven't...
Yes, Phil Lord is definitely a follower of the show.
Phil, I'm assuming that Japanese Spider-Man is going to show up in the third one. If he doesn't, then y'all kind of make sure Japanese Spider-Man shows up in the third one. Please and thank you.
If Japanese Spider-Man shows up in the third one, and then there's a quick like little caption next to it, it's like, "You're welcome, Vincent." I'm gonna die. I'm actually going to die. I was just happy that I saw the spider buggy. When I saw the spider buggy, I was like, "Yo, I am with it. I'm done."
Peter Park car.
Peter Park Peter car.
That's a
car,
solid pun.
Right. I know. Mm-hmm. I know. I was tickled.
Is the Spider-Man from the video game is in there?
Yes.
The bag man Spider-Man is it? Like, I mean,
that's a deep cut too.
That's a pretty deep cut.
Bagman Spider-Man. Yeah. Yeah. They even have fun with 1967 Spider-Man.
Yeah.
That's the way he comes swinging.
And his legs, he cramps up.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it was so...
It's just a love letter.
It's a love...
Like, it's also a love letter.
But like,
to this.
But like we said, it's a love letter that doesn't get in the way of the story. Because shout out to... Because as much as the spot, voiced by Jason Schwartzman, giving everybody...
Who does great work.
Does great work.
Yeah.
Does great work. Because he sells the comedy,
yeah,
but he also sells the villainy.
Yeah.
Right? But as much as we're keeping for him, the other kind of like antagonist in this movie is Miguel Herrera,
yeah,
of Spider-Man 2099, voiced by Oscar Isaacs. And like Oscar Isaacs long ago became like a favorite actor of mine. And like, yo, that work is killer because you get his motivation.
Absolutely.
You 100% get his motivation. You kind of side with him a little bit. You can see why everybody rallies around him and sees him as, because he leads the Spider Society.
Right.
And you can see why he leads the Spider Society, one, because he's kind of like the Spider-Man of the Spider-Man. But two, because of his backstory and how tragic it is. And Oscar Isaac sells it and kills it in this movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I can't wait to see what happens to him in the third movie. And like, you see the change in Spider-Woman at the end when Gwen is like, "We're supposed to be the good guys." You know what I mean? Like that, man. Yeah. They did a good job.
Yeah. My one note about this movie, and I actually saw it played out a little bit on the internet because I was curious about this, is that there seems to be an ongoing issue with the sound of the movie when you're watching the movie. I saw that because I felt it honestly when we were watching the movie that I was like, "Oh, the sound doesn't sound like mixed very well. It sounds like very, like some moments sound very low, some moments sound like a little loud and stuff like that." But we went to a press screening, so I was like, "All right, well, maybe." But when I went to see it again, some of those same issues were there, which then prompted me to go online. And I saw that Phil Lord actually did a tweet about making sure that your theater is showing this with like the audio set at a, like sure, a certain level.
It, right.
Something
right,
like
set
that.
Up a certain way.
Because that seemed to be an ongoing issue around, I guess, in other theaters.
Oh, that's interesting. I know I didn't understand Hobie Brown some of his lines in the preview,
mm-hmm.
but it was much clearer in the one that I
and
saw.
And it probably. Yeah.
And I'm wondering if maybe I saw with the audio set
correctly.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah, right. So that is my one note. If you do find that when you go see the movie, you know, just like maybe just go talk to your projectionist. And Phil Lord actually tells people, like, go talk, tell the projectionist, it's the sound supposed to be said at this. They give you any pushback, tell them Phil Lord said
something. Tell them Phil Lord.
He actually said that.
I know every projectionist in America was like, come on, man. But yeah.
Yeah, just real true. Real talk. Okay, we buried the lead. We would definitely recommend.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
No, I haven't seen the first one in years, and I saw it was like on a random channel, but my cable was like, no, you can't just watch it from the beginning. Like, did y'all watch the first one again before seeing the second one?
I didn't watch it immediately, but I can guarantee you, because it is a perennial favorite of my household,
I've seen it in
the past 2 months.
Mm.
And I've seen it a lot. So, like, are there any questions you have about any aspect of the first movie?
It, like, I didn't see it going in, and I was like, man, should I? And this is just a me thing. The last time I did that, where I was like watching a bunch of movies back to back before I saw the new one, was John Wick. And I was like, I just saw too much murder in a day. So I'm not doing that again. Yeah. But like, watching that second one made me want to go back and watch the first one, because the way that they refer to it, I'm like, this story can't be that tight.
It is actually that tight. It is. You know, I have to say, the plot point, and they play fair. The plot point of the spider being from the other universe,
it's all right there.
It's all right
there. It is all right there.
But I thought that 42 referred to, this was the 42nd spider they had experimented on.
I saw a tweet that said that, like, the comic book Miles Morales, it is the 42nd experiment.
Right.
But this one is from a different, it's different than the comic. Yeah.
Well, it glitches. It actually glitches in the first one.
I do remember it glitching.
Which they let you know if something is glitching, that means it's from another. And then the beautiful subtlety is that people have already stitched. I have to admit, I've had a research assistant for this episode. My daughter has been all over TikTok, and she's showing me different things. When Miles' spider sense goes off the first time.
Are you talking about this movie or the first?
In the first movie, when Miles meets R.I. Peter.
Yes.
And their spider sense goes off at the same time. Miles' spider sense lines are purple and green.
Mm.
They don't turn red and blue until R.I.P. Peter dies. So he actually has a spider sense from the other universe. And then when Peter dies, he sinks, and he's this universe's Spider-Man.
Mm. Oh, wow.
And they set this up in the... It's so amazingly...
Well, real quick, for people that don't know, what is this... why is it unique that his spider sense is first purple and green?
Because he's been bitten by the spider from what we're calling the Prowler universe.
Right.
Because when he goes at the end, it's all purples and greens because this is the Prowler universe. And as Miguel tells him, you are an anomaly because you were bitten by a spider that was meant for someone in that universe.
Right.
But they brought the spider to your... He's from 1610.
Right.
And they bite him. And it's...
And the purple and green is the colors of the Prowler.
Of the Prowler. Right. And I just... I was just amazed at the audacity of them seeding that in the first one.
Wow.
In a film that... There's no way no one knew it was going to be this.
No, because in the first one, when you see the spider glitch, you just assume it's the radioactivity.
Right.
Right. If you even notice the color of his spider sense, because there's so much madcap animation happening, you're thinking it's just a stylistic choice.
Right.
You don't know it's storytelling happening in front of your eyes.
Look, even in this one, the second time watching it, when he's in 42's bedroom,
mm-hmm.
if you look around the bedroom, there's a speed bag.
Well, you notice subtle differences.
And there's a record player because Uncle Aaron is still alive.
Yes.
So mm. all of those Aaron influences
yeah.
you actually see in his bedroom.
Right. Mm. And there's subtle differences because when mom opens the door, if you pay attention behind her in the rest of the apartment, there's subtle differences there.
Too. Yeah.
I kind of know. That's what I kind of noticed.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like, ooh, something is a little wrong.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I mean, from the time she was like, when he was like, I'm Spider-Man, she was like, who's that? I was like, oh, yeah, it's a different universe. Because remember, they were talking about Spider-Man earlier in the movie, saying, oh, I they said he's Puerto Rican. He was like, no, I think he looks Dominican to me. Like, that was a little joke. But again, a little joke that really speaks to the Latinx experience in this country. And and of New York City, I will say. I've seen many a high school fight between Puerto Ricans and Dominicans. all in good fun, obviously. But like, yeah.
Mm. Oh my God. Any last thoughts about Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, Daryl?
It's a really good movie, man. Yeah, it's really good. You should see it. Bring a friend. Bring your family.
Bring a family.
Oh, I will say, for years, everybody would say, oh, you know, Marvel is killing it in the movies. But when it comes to animation, DC is taking them to town. And
no
they showed up with Spider-Man and said, listen, y'all need to fix how you say my name.
They do.
Put some respect on it.
Though, to be fair, this is Sony. With yeah. a deal with Marvel.
Right.
So, you know, Sony is like, yo, put some respect on our name as well.
Well, and also Sony does not want to lose the Spider-Man franchise, and they will if they ever
know,
wait too long. So,
right. Yeah. I have to say, I was guardingly sort of optimistic about this. Because I think what made the first one work so well, and we talk about this all the time, where these films kind of come out of nowhere
mm-hmm.
and they're amazing films. And part of the reason that they work is because, as I always talk about, the lunchbox people, like mm-hmm. the lunchbox and pajama people aren't paying attention.
Right.
So mm-hmm. then the filmmakers and the artists can actually create their art. And I was a little concerned that there were going to be more lawyers and accountants
kind of like in
the lunchbox people involved. So I have to give credit where credit is due to the execs, to the people in, you know, the C-suite who decided to let these artists create
mm-hmm.
because this is a masterpiece.
It is.
This is actually a masterpiece. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about, is this even better than the first one? Which I think is a fair conversation to have.
Well, certainly.
But in my mind, this is like saying that Miles Davis is a better musician than Louis Armstrong.
Mm-hmm.
Where like you could argue it, but part of the reason that Miles Davis is Miles Davis is because he could stand on the foundation
right.
of Louis Armstrong. And in my mind, this just builds
mm-hmm.
off of the first one. And you know, Daryl, much like you, I'm very much looking forward to the third one.
Oh my goodness. Like, yeah, like again, you know, superhero movies, you still make movies. Like it does like the Godfather 2 thing. Like it builds on the world. It builds, it adds, it, you know, and just makes, it flushes out characters that you wanted to see more of from the first one. Like, man.
It bears repeating, without losing the lead.
Yeah, right? This is Miles' story.
Because they build up Gwen, but this is not an ensemble.
No.
This is still Miles' movie, right? This is still Miles' movie. Just a beautiful piece of art. And if you would, said, again, they're doing a sequel to this movie. The Spot's going to be the main villain. They are changing the directors.
Yeah.
From the first movie.
Yeah.
You would say, okay, that's enough to be like, and they're throwing in like a ton more like characters. You'll be like, all right, that's just enough to just be cautiously step back a little bit, right? But then you're right. They nail it and they keeping the group intact. This is the exact same group that is doing the next movie beyond the Spider-Verse. Shout out to Joaquin DeSantos, who, like I said, a guy who cut his teeth in the animated cartoon TV series, Streets. I believe this may be his feature film debut. If not, it's hard-pressed to find another thing that he's done better than this, dog, because you murdered it, son. You murdered it. This was just a joy to behold. I love Ken Powers. I could just imagine. I imagine a lot of that character building is him, because that was a lot of what Soul was.
Right, right. And just like that sort of abstract aspect of Soul, which I love so much.
Yeah.
You pick up immediately from when Gwen is playing the drums and you see that imagery.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of the drums, yo, if you like the movie, get the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Because like the original, the soundtrack is ridiculous. It is.
Metro Boomin.
Yes. No joke.
There's a Spider-Man in there.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Metro Boomin. Yeah, that's. I think that's him. It says, there's no way out.
Yeah. Yeah.
My bad, y'all. There was a way out.
Oh, my God. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Check out Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
After you see that, make your way to Philadelphia on June 30th so that you can be front seat at Punchline to see the sexiest comedian in America, dare I say the world.
The world.
Daryl Charles, ladies and gentlemen, of the DTF Fun Hour, which is where
he... And to speak about DTF, the Daryl and Timmy Fun Hour, we're having our 10th anniversary show on the 24th at Frankie Bradley's. So
get out of here.
Come for the sex fun game show.
Yes, the DTF Fun Hour is a podcast now that has fun talking about sexuality, sexual topics in America, deep, serious topics. Like they go in on their topics, but they have so much fun. Daryl and Tim Marie both have their bona fides in comedy, but also in the sexual education
right
space.
Yeah, that's Dr. Tim Marie, who has a doctorate in homosexuality, so she knows what she's talking about.
She does. But then when they do their live show, I don't think you've ever gone to.
I've not been blessed yet.
Vincent, it is ridiculous, because then they take their show and turn it into a game show.
All right.
It is so much.
Yeah, it's highly interactive. We've had plenty of times when people in the audience would just stop us and be like, wait, explain this or ask a question. So, yeah, we have fun with it. You know, we talk about sex and gender, yeah, but you know, the conversation goes everywhere, because that is something that is the reason why we're all here. So it jumps into every aspect of life, and we're not afraid to talk about it, and we have fun. And you know, it's going to be a game show. We're going to have some dancers. It's going to be a good time.
Oh, there you go. Nice. There you go. June 24th at Frankie Bradley's in Philadelphia, the DTF Fun Hour live, and then you can check Daryl Charles at Punchline Comedy on June 30th, live.
Yeah, front June 30th, July 1st. My first Friday, Saturday in Philadelphia. You know, let's do it. Show up. I have really good jokes. I have an album, Black Gentrifier. You can listen to it. Nothing. I said on the album is going to be in this next show. So,
all right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right now. And we will put the links in the show notes, ladies and gentlemen. We'll even add the links to our website so you can check it out. If you're listening to us, you can go by way of the Michelle Mission to connect with Daryl Charles, comedian Daryl Charles. Daryl,
yes, who was
a big fan of our show. Thank you for your devotion and a great friend. Thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you, Daryl. Man.
Thank you so much for having me. If you could have saw me cracking up as Len gets so mad at Vince for nailing every 6 degrees of Durfo Martin, and then all the conversations about the whites only movies that Len had to bring up. Just a good time. I wish you gentlemen nothing but the best. It's a great show, and I'm so happy I'll do it.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, D, man. I will be talking to you, brother. We're going to let all you right, go. Man. All right, ladies and gentlemen, before we tell you what we're going to be reviewing next week and our special guest next week.
Yeah.
The emails may have to wait for another week, ladies and gentlemen. I invite you to follow the Michelle Mission, Two Men, One Podcast, every black film ever made. Go to michellemission.com to check out all of the cool designs that we have by way of clicking swag. Go over to our shop, where you can check out all the cool designs and shirts and Durvo Martin collection that we have by way of our good friends at T Public. Did you notice that Daryl had on his Durvo Martin shirt when we went to the screening?
Yeah.
We went to the screening. Mm-hmm. He was proudly emblazoned.
That's right,
Durvo Martin. There you go. So that was very cool. If you like the Michelle Mission, follow the Michelle Mission on all the social medias, whether it be Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, at Michelle Mission. You can also subscribe to the Michelle Mission on YouTube at Michelle Mission. Help us get our numbers up. We're trying to make our way to 1,000 subscribers. We're almost there. We're creeping closely, but help us get there, ladies and gentlemen. We really appreciate it. We stream every week from the Video Content Factory, Philadelphia's premier podcast palace here in Manayunk, PA. All right. You can also reach the Michelle Mission. You can email us at michellemission@gmail.com, or you can leave us a voicemail.
Leave us a voicemail.
Like Calvin, so you can't make fun of it. Calvin left us a voicemail, and you can too. 215-867-9666. Did I get that number right, Dylan? There you go. 215-867-9666. Leave us a voicemail. Tell us what's on your mind, ladies and gentlemen. We play the voicemails right here on air. So why don't you do it? I think I see Daryl picking up the phone even as we speak.
I don't think you do.
You just couldn't go with it.
I mean, I'm looking at him. I was making sure I wasn't hallucinating. Oh, no, no. He did. Oh, he did pick up the phone.
And the Michelle Mission, as always, is a proud member of the Podglomerate Podcast Network. The Podglomerate, they make podcasts work. All right.
All right.
Next week, Vincent.
Yes.
Here on the Michelle Mission.
Mm-hmm.
We did it. We buried the lead.
Yeah.
Daryl Charles was also one of our very special guests who took part in the Class of 1989 miniseries.
He is. I talk about Daryl's observation of being a child of Hoke all the time.
You do. Yes, you do.
Bringing season here, and I got to ask that old white woman to go and pee.
The Class of 1989, it's available wherever you get podcasts, ladies and gentlemen. And Daryl was very, very cool to be a part of that. Another gentleman who was a prominent voice on the Class of 1989 will be our guest, making his actual Michelle Mission debut.
Yeah.
As we welcome noted film critic Tim Cogshell.
Yes.
Here on the Michelle Mission to join us in celebrating the career of the recently departed Jim Brown from in 1969's 100 Rifles.
Yeah.
Which he stars alongside the other sex symbol of the 60s, because Jim Brown was definitely one of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the other one was one Raquel Welch.
Right. Would you not say the third big star was one of the sex symbols?
He's not a sex symbol yet. He becomes the sex symbol in the 70s.
Sex symbol on the horizon.
On the horizon.
Burt Reynolds. Yeah.
100 Rifles. 100
Rifles, that's right.
As we dip into Vincent's favorite genre, Westerns, next week here on the Michaud Mission. Until then, he's Vincent, I'm Len, and in parting we say,
we'll see you when it's time to meet again.
The Michaud Mission is produced by Len Webb and Vincent Williams and edited by Len Webb with co-production by Mo Poplar, music by Alexa Gold, and filmed at the Video Content Factory. The Michaud Mission is a proud member of the Podglomerate Podcast Network.